tuned to Down the Dunk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Down to Dunk Podcast. This is Andrew. This is part two of our playoff preview podcast. We'll have interviews with Brian Keating, Andrew Gilman, Eli Friedman, and Royce Young. Please stay tuned and be sure to follow us on Twitter at DTD Podcast and go to our website, downtodunk.com. Thanks for listening.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Down to Dunk. We continue our postseason preview or post-view or whatever. We have one of our good friends from KOCO, the sports director there, Brian Keating, at KOCO Keating on Twitter with us today. Brian, how you doing?
I'm good. What's going on? Glad to be back.
Hey, man, we always appreciate you, and I told Carson this, and hopefully it doesn't get us in trouble with anybody else we have interviewing, but KOCO is my news of choice and has been for a while, but the sports stuff you guys are doing has just been incredible recently, so we appreciate what you're doing there as well.
Hey, man, we're excited. I mean, hey, when you've got the Oklahoma City Thunder and everything they're doing, I mean, it's an unbelievable time to be in Oklahoma City, and so we're trying to do the best job we can. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I have a question, just a personal question to break the ice a little bit. On your Twitter account, your little bio talks about air drumming. I am an avid air drummer myself. Uh-huh. And so I want to know, are there particular songs that bring out the best in you with air drumming?
Oh, particular song. I'll tell you what, you know, when you get a good, you know, Dave Matthews Band, you know, Carter Beaufort jamming on his like 25 piece drum set that he's got. I mean, I crush that at home. You know, it's Saturday afternoon. I'm sitting around listening to something like that. I crush it. And so in the car, you got to have the drums, the air drums going on the steering wheel and the shifter. And so, yeah, it's a bad habit that I probably have, but I've embraced it. And so at least if you're going to embrace it, do the best you can.
Well, that's I think on my tombstone, it's going to be that Jay died while using his legs to steer the car so he could play drums to Foo Fighters in the air.
Oh, see, no, I like that. I mean, you know, whether it's, you know, Dave, you know, jamming the Nirvana or whatever. Oh, yeah. And I can do the Foo Fighters, you know, Taylor Hawkins getting it done. So
he's really good too. Fun. Yeah. Well, I'm a drummer, or used to be a drummer a little bit. And so it's one of my, I was drawn to that question. So I figured we could start that conversation that way.
No, it's perfect. I was in the same, I mean, you know, I played the drums when I was a kid. It's been a long time, but I'm an avid air drummer. And so that's how we get it done these days.
I love it. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Thunder basketball as we go forward. The first question I have is just real quick and a simple way to do that. What are three significant points that you pulled from this regular season that concludes on Wednesday night?
You know, I think the biggest thing that I pulled is that Kevin Durant's just getting better, and he's just scratching the surface. And, you know, we've seen him grow from when he came here from Seattle as a 20-year-old kid. And now to be where he is, he's going to win the MVP. He's just improved so much. And I think he's just scratching the surface. I think most important thing for me is LeBron's been the best player in the world for a long time, probably without much competition. I think now you're starting to see people say, is LeBron still the best player? Is it going to be Kevin Durant? I think the time is coming when Kevin Durant will be the easy answer, and LeBron will be past his prime, and he'll pass that torch to Kevin Durant. And I think, you know, that's going to happen here in the next probably year, two, and it might be happening right now if the Thunder can go ahead and win a championship. So I think that's what I take, is that Kevin Durant's becoming the best player in the world and narrowing that gap with LeBron. And I think what we've seen out of the bench that's really given me a lot of reason of optimism going into the playoffs is that all the injuries that Oklahoma City was able to withstand, I don't think this team could have done that 2 and 3 years ago. Even when they went to the finals, they had a few injuries, but not many. And that was to Tabo when, you know, they started Daquan Cook for a couple of games and really kept James Harden on the bench. So they had that continuity. And now you see a different starting lineup for Oklahoma City almost on a nightly basis. I think a couple of days ago, they had started their original starting cast for like the second time in 50 games or something. So I think them being able to withstand those injuries has put them in a position to win you get in big playoff series, you get into foul trouble, you have some bad things happen in those series, you've really got a lot of pieces that have played big minutes. They understand what their role is. I think they're more seasoned for that role down the line. I think, you know, the other thing is, I'm a really big advocate for Scott Brooks, and I don't think he gets any credit really from anybody. I think he's done a tremendous job with this group, and I think it goes back to those injuries and molding the different casts he's had to do. I mean, we've seen Harry Jones and Andre Roberson and Jeremy Lamb. I mean, we've seen so many guys in the starting lineup, Steven Adams, that we never imagined would ever be there. And here's Oklahoma City. They're going to be the 2 seed in the Western Conference. I think they are a prohibitive favorite to be in the NBA Finals with a chance to win the championship. I think Scott Brooks has really proven himself as a head coach that he's ready for the wars. Now, he's got to prove it in the playoffs. There's no doubt about that. They've been in the Finals, and I think as the favorite, anytime you don't get back, it's a disappointment. I think it would certainly be for Oklahoma City this year. But I think Scott Brooks has proven himself to be a very solid head coach, and I'm not sure we would have said that not so long ago.
And it's hard for a guy like me. I just struggle with Brooks, and I have, just to be honest. But the reality of what he's done with as many players as he's had out over the course of the season and still looking at having 60 wins is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. And hey, they're doing it with young kids. I mean, think about that. You know, guys, we didn't – Steven Adams is playing, you know, 15 minutes a night. And, you know, Reggie Jackson's in his third season. And Jeremy Lamb got here about 5 minutes ago, has played huge minutes at different times. Harry Jones, the same sort of way. And maybe that speaks to the greatness of Kevin Durant. And I think it always does. Eric Spoelstra's in a similar spot as Scott Brooks, as he doesn't get any credit because he has LeBron. That's part of having the best player in the league. But I think Scott Brooks has proven himself to be a very solid head coach with the job, especially this season, to win 60 games, to be the 2 seed, to be the favorite, and all those kinds of things. I think it says a lot about Scott Brooks and the job he's done this season.
Absolutely. I think it's just one of those things for me that just kind of humbles my opinion of Brooks, is to realize that, you know, they were playing out without three of their starters, and not just starters, that guys that they plugged to fill in holes this season, but this is the same starting five they've had for going on 3 years. And that's impressive to do so. I think we've undervalued Scott Brooks quite a bit. And so moving on to second question, as part of kind of a follow-up to that, is your expectations for this season coming into the season versus what they kind of were fulfilled as coming into the last couple games. Did your expectations get exceeded? Were they kind of right where you thought they were going to be, or were they possibly a letdown for this season?
Definitely not a letdown. I think, you know, if they were to lose in the second round of the playoffs, then I think you can begin to bring that topic up again. They exceeded my expectations because I didn't think they'd win 60 games. I thought this was a transition year for a lot of this group. I thought Sam Presti was going to play a lot of these young guys. He was going to find out without a shadow of a doubt what he had, because I'm not sure we knew exactly what we had in Jeremy Lamb and Perry Jones, certainly not Steven Adams, who I think most people thought would be in Tulsa this year. I thought it was a transition year. Hey, they're going to win 52, 55 games. They're going to be the 4 seed, and they're going to have a chance maybe to get back to the Western Conference Finals, or maybe they're going to have to make a significant move in the middle of the season once he sort of had an idea of what the young players could do. And they've exceeded my expectations as far as that goes. You know, like you said, they're going to 60 games again. They are the favorite, in my opinion, to win the Western Conference. And they've done it with a variety of problems and injuries. I never thought that when Russell went down, from what we saw in the playoffs last year, you know, there were times this year, especially the beginning of it, where I thought, you know, I'm not sure without Russell Westbrook, this is a viable playoff team. Not only was I crazy for saying that, I mean, you know, here they are with the 2 seed. So, I mean, they've exceeded my expectations as far as the regular season. Now, when you're the favorite, you got to go out there and perform when it counts, and it's about to count. You know, this is where they want to be. They're in the situation they want to be. They're the 2 seed with home court advantage against everyone except the San Antonio Spurs, and they've had the Spurs number for a long time.
Yeah, I think that I'm with you on that, and I remember I think Carson said it about the conversation that you and him had about how bad they would be without Russ. But if you watched them lose that string where I think they lost to the Nuggets and the Jazz on back-to-back nights or something, they're back 2 out of 3, and it was, they looked terrible.
They did. Well, you remember,
and
the,
then all
the
of a sudden,
game of the year when they're playing Minnesota on the road, and here's Kevin Martin, and everyone's telling me how great Kevin Martin was. They're not going to be any good because they don't have Kevin Martin. And he goes out and puts up about 20. They get blown out. Same kind of a deal. You go, holy moly, maybe this team's not very good.
It was a surprise, and then they just started rattling off that run where Durant was scoring, and I was quickly changed my opinion on that.
Yeah, no doubt.
So let's talk a little bit about Kevin Durant. As we all are expecting, and would be, I mean, blown away, surprised if he doesn't win the MVP coming up here in the next couple of weeks. What do you think that MVP season means for the franchise? And let's talk a little bit about what it means even for the city of Oklahoma City, because I think it's a thing that we're not really sure what to do with.
I think you're right. We've been spoiled is probably not even enough. I mean, to get this franchise at a time when a guy that will be at one time the best player in the world shows up in your city. Yeah, I don't think we understand what's going on here. I think an MVP completely validates his season, and he's going to win that thing. I don't think it will even be close. But I think for Oklahoma City, you know, it's another notch in getting closer to that championship. I think some of the playoff failures that they're beginning to have and have, you know, have had against the Heat and the Mavericks, and then last year when it all kind of fell apart on them, I think they're beginning to taste some of that sour that comes with every franchise playing in the playoffs. But I think it's just another notch closer to getting to where you want to be. People in Oklahoma are proud folks. You know that. And that comes from college football probably primarily. And so we got this thing in the NBA that we can really hang our hat on. We can really say we are a big league city franchise. We do it the right way. We have great players with great character. And we got the best player in the world. And that says a lot about what people in Oklahoma City and the state of Oklahoma think about themselves and have always done that. So I think it's a big thing for Oklahoma City. It's obviously a big thing for Kevin Durant. He's in the last couple of weeks at least decided that he was going to admit that it was somewhat important to him winning that MVP. And so it's going to be a big deal for him. I think it takes some pressure off in some ways. You know, he's had that LeBron stigma, always number two. Now, not in championship, certainly kind of circles, but he's not number two to LeBron for the first time ever. And I think that's a big deal, probably mentally for him and maybe for this team to say, hey, we're coming, we're knocking on the door, and we don't have to beat you. You're going to have to beat us because we got the best player in the world.
Yeah, that's a big deal. And to get a Longhorn to be this loved by Oklahomans is something of a feat in itself.
You know, it's a miraculous thing. I've lived here, you know, 30-some-odd years in Oklahoma and never would have imagined anyone with any kind of stroke walking around. You know, Kevin Durant pulls up at an OU basketball game or an OSU basketball or football game, and he sports those Longhorns, and everybody goes, that's okay, we still love you, Kevin. I mean, it's an amazing thing. You know, when Roy Al Ivey was here, they would introduce him, and they would both do the Longhorns thing as he walked out and got introduced. I mean, I just never would have imagined that would have been the case. But that's the greatness of Kevin Durant. Everyone loves him. He can do no wrong, especially in Oklahoma, and it is pretty cool to see.
Well, let's transition a little bit to playoffs. What do you think are some things that you would be kind of concerned about as the Thunder head into the playoffs?
Well, I mean, I think the way that this year is gone, you got to be a little bit concerned about injuries, and primarily to Russell Westbrook, because hey, he looks healthy and he's doing everything. And I think when he's been healthy this year, he's had the best year he's ever had as far as just improving as a player. But, you know, he's been hurt a lot. And he's still not playing on back-to-back games. And they still have a minute restriction on him. So how is that going to change going forward? I mean, I think they're going to lift the minute restriction. And I think they've sort of handled him with kid gloves as far as back-to-backs. I think that's all going to go away, even though they haven't said that. But, I mean, that's a big concern for me because I think if they're healthy, they're the best team and maybe the best team in the league because Miami can't stay healthy either. So I think, you know, that's sort of the dichotomy between those two teams. They're healthy. that's the biggest concern for me is how that moves forward. But I think if you were looking, and let's just say they are healthy, the biggest concern for me in a matchup where they have to play the Clippers, and I've said for a long time, I think that's the biggest test for them is that second round game. They kind of wanted to avoid the Clippers in the second round because that's who you wanted to play in the Western Conference Finals. And the Clippers can match them pretty much, you know, tit for tat athletically. And so defensively, is Oklahoma City going to be good enough, consistently enough, to beat a team like that? And so, you know, they take nights off, and maybe that's just regular season stuff. Maybe that's, you know, they're waiting on the postseason. I think we've seen that in the last couple of months. Certainly in the last few weeks, they've taken nights off and gotten beat by teams that they probably shouldn't. So defensively, are they going to dig in enough, and are they going to be healthy? And I mean, really, if they're healthy, I think they're the best team in the West. I think they have a chance to win the whole thing. And, you know, let's see if they can do that. And if they can, I like their chances.
I love it. I think I'm with you on the injury bug. You know, some of the things that I think, and I was just talking just a little bit ago with Anthony Slayer from the Oklahoman, but one of the biggest things for me is just not to put too much weight in some of these games where they've looked so lethargic. Because yeah. I think there's been some, it's just a long NBA season, and they realized kind of where they were going to line up. And you saw them show up against the Clippers and the Spurs, and that's kind of, I think, the define of who this team is more than those games where they lost to the Suns and whatnot. So final question, just some quick predictions for you. I think that what we did earlier is we looked at the 7-8 seed. I know it's between Phoenix and Memphis kind of finishing out the season, and then Dallas kind of to see who the Thunder could play. And so who do you think wins that one or gets the 7-8 seed?
I think Dallas will win the 7th seed, and I think Phoenix is going to find a way to sneak in. Just because I think the Grizzlies are better, but, you know, they've been so hot and cold. I think the Suns, you know, they know they're playing for their lives, and if they make some shots, boy, they're hard to beat, and they're hard to beat for anybody if they make shots. I think it comes down to that, and I think in a matchup against the Grizzlies, at least for Phoenix, they're hard to guard because they just spread you out so much. And maybe that's my heart picking because I'd like to see Phoenix get in because they're fun to watch. And it would be fun to see a Phoenix-San Antonio series where Phoenix wants to shoot about 35 threes and San Antonio wants to shoot about 35 threes. And so it'd be sort of fun theatrics. So I'm probably picking there. And obviously the Mavericks are in. I'd like to see a Thunder-Mavericks series because the Mavericks have been pretty good against Oklahoma City this season. You know, anytime you've got Dirk on your team, you got a puncher's chance because we saw how hot he can get, you know, 2 or 3 years ago in the postseason. So I think that'd be a fun series. It's some teams that have playoff history. It's one of the few teams Oklahoma City really has playoff rivalry kind of history with. And so I think at least for first round standards, that would be pretty fun.
Yeah, I think that's what it'll end up being. I hope that Phoenix makes it. I feel like that. I think that Memphis and Phoenix play tonight to kind of decide.
I think
that.
They do.
So I hope Phoenix can go on. I think it's in Memphis. I think they can go in there and win. I hope so. But okay. So you talked.
I don't think the Grizzlies could compete with San Antonio at all. I mean, I think we saw the best of the Grizzlies last season. They got swept by the Spurs. So I think that would be a short series. And I think the way that Phoenix plays, with their home court advantage, with their young guys just kind of have nothing to lose, I think we'd at least have a chance to see some drama in that first round if it was San Antonio and Phoenix.
And so you've already talked a little bit about how you feel like the Thunder are the favorites for the finals, and in my opinion, probably yours as well, is the champs. So what do you think, how does that shake out as far as who plays in the Eastern Conference Finals, who plays in the Western Conference Finals, and then who's your finals matchup?
Gosh, you know, starting in the East, and maybe I'm torn by what I saw yesterday, is that Indiana, when they play well, they're pretty darn good. The things that they can do defensively, at least on the perimeter athletically against a guy like LeBron or a guy like Durant, you know, Paul George is kind of that second tier of small forward players that can at least be in that conversation. And, hey, Indiana's really deep, and they're pretty big, and they have veteran, tough guys. If they can get it together, I think they could be dangerous. And here's the thing about the East is that they will get it together because they don't have to play anybody that's any good in the Eastern Conference playoffs, you know, for a couple of rounds. So Indiana's probably going to win a first-round series against Atlanta. That's probably a 4-1 series. And so you win 4-1 in a series in this second round, you know, say they win this the sucker in six games, all of a sudden they're playing well again. They've got confidence and sort of regained what they had lost. So I think I like Indiana, and I think I definitely like Miami. I think Miami's the best team over there. I don't think Indiana can beat them, even though they've given them a run for their money. Anytime you roll out LeBron and that group out there, if they're healthy, when Wade is healthy, I think they're probably the best team in the world. Problem with them is that Wade's not always healthy. So I think we're going to see Miami go through in the Eastern Conference, and I think we're going to see Oklahoma City go through in the Eastern Conference. I think that's what we would have seen last season when Russell got hurt. I think they were the two best teams. I think they've been that for the last 3 years. I think we're going to see that again, and we're going to find out whether Scott Brooks is willing to make adjustments. I've given him a lot of praise in the time we've talked today. We're going to see if he's willing to make adjustments in a series against the Heat where you have to play small. It's been proven over years and years of failure for Oklahoma City. We're going to see if he's willing to do that. In Miami, he was willing to do that. They made some shots, and they blew him out. In Oklahoma City, he wasn't willing to make that lineup change to start the game. Miami got up like 20-5, and Oklahoma City couldn't rally. So I think that's what we're going to see. Again, I think they're the two best teams. I think they're the two best players. I know that's what the NBA would certainly like to see, and I think it'd be a lot of fun for us around here.
So you think the Thunder play the Spurs in the Western Conference Finals? You think they play, I don't know who, I guess Houston maybe?
I'm not in love with Houston. I think Houston, I don't think those guys are tough enough mentally. I think they got a couple of guys that sort of are instigators, you know, Garcia and Beverly that sort of like to exude toughness. But to me, that's a Matt Barnes kind of a fake tough guy mentality. That's the way you have to play to stay in the league. That's kind of what way I think about Patrick Beverly, Francisco Garcia. They just try to get under people's skin. I don't think they're tough enough to beat a team like the Spurs. So I think it's probably the one and the two in the East and the one and the two in the West. I know that's not exactly going out on a limb, but I think those are the four best teams. And, you know, San Antonio, it's impossible for me to pick against them, against anyone other than Oklahoma City, because they've taken people to task. I think they would do the same to just about everybody in the Western Conference. They got the best coach in basketball. They got three Hall of Famers. They certainly know how to get through and win the finals. So I'm not picking against them.
I'd like to welcome Andrew Gilman from Fox Sports Southwest to the Down and Dunk podcast. Andrew, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming on again. We had you on for our midseason review podcast. And I just want to mention that you're probably my favorite follow on Twitter for Thunder basketball, just because you bring something different every single night, and it's so much fun.
Different is good. I don't know if it's informative, but I try to entertain more than anything else. There's a lot of great followers out there for the Thunder stuff. Certainly, everybody brings their own element, and I try to do something a little different. I don't know. Some probably people get I get a lot of unfollows. That's for sure. So I guess that's a good thing for. I mean, that means people are paying attention enough, right? To unfollow,
there you go. No, I love it. So this regular season has been kind of up and down, and it's just been weird.
It's hard to imagine that the Thunder are right on the edge of winning 60 games, and it doesn't seem like it. Sometimes they don't seem. They seem like a D student in school, and other times I see it like seem like an A plus student. So to have them win close to 60 games, for as much as people in our business nitpick them a lot, it's shocking. And then you look at the record and you're like, well, maybe they're doing things right after all.
It's insane. And when you think about Russell Westbrook missing half the season, if you told me that Russell would miss half the season, I'd say, well, maybe they win 45 games, 50 games if they're lucky.
You're exactly right. I mean, I think that they've overachieved in a lot of ways, but, you know, they're sort of I use a school analogy once, but I mean, if you expect an A student, if you have a potential to be an A student, then people get disappointed when you bring home B's. But if your potential is only a C, then nobody's disappointed if you bring home a C. So I think that's part of the reason that, you know, we expect the sort of greatness of the Thunder, and maybe that's because of being in the culture of Oklahoma football. College football might be part of it, and the fact that the Thunder have improved every season for the last 5 years. So maybe it's just that that fans and media alike expect the Thunder to be great every time out, and it's just not a realistic thing to happen.
Sure, and one of the biggest changes here at the end of the season has been the addition of Caron Butler. And he's affected the rotations, and I'm sure he has an effect on the locker room that we don't see.
Tell
me what you've seen from Butler.
He's a super friendly guy, first of all. That's the first thing I noticed. He is welcoming and engaging anyone and everyone in conversation. He's fun to – we were sort of teasing him in the last month as Connecticut made that run to the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Thunder locker room is filled with Connecticut guys, with Lamb and the Beat, and of course Butler, and then Kevin Ollie, of course, the great coach for Connecticut, was with the Thunder a couple seasons ago. Mm-hmm.
And so Jeremy Lamb.
And there's a heavy Connecticut influence in there. Yep. So Butler teasing everybody else about how great Connecticut is, especially picking on Perry Jones and Baylor and things like that. But that just shows you, I think, that he felt comfortable enough to do that, despite the fact that he's been on the team for a very, very short amount of time, relatively, the season, just a matter of moments, really, for the season. But I think it shows a couple things. Off the court, he's valued and comfortable, but on the court, almost immediately, you saw Scott Brooks sort of fall in love with him in the sense that he did with the same way he sort of does with Derek Fisher. He loves the veterans. And he trusts them. And what did it take, 2 games for Caron Butler to start playing 25 minutes? I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I think he's averaging around that, somewhere around 25. And he will be a major, major piece in the playoffs where guys like Jeremy Lamb or Perry Jones that might have been on the fringe, I think they get bumped back a little bit.
Yeah. And what have you seen from those guys, those two in particular, Jeremy Lamb and Perry Jones, who have, essentially been bumped out of the rotation? What have you seen from their attitudes, or has there been really any change for them at all?
Because they're very good friends, and you can tell they locker right next to each other, so they talk a lot, particularly pregame. They're always sort of together, and whether they're watching something on their phones or they're just chatting, they're very close, and Reggie Jackson's over there with them too. All three of those guys are close, and all three of those guys in this grand scale of things have been sort of picked on more than other people in the Thunder locker room, except for maybe Kendrick Perkins. So I don't know if it's a youth thing or not, but I would expect, well, first of all, with the Thunder, you have to realize they're all real good about being company men. So if something's bothering them, it's really hard to tell because they're not going to really let you in on something like that. But I think that it has gotten to Jeremy Lamb more than anyone, because he seemed like he was sort of on the way up. He had several good games this season. He's had some bad ones too, but he's been a contributor in a lot of ways, minutes-wise as well. He's had his best season as a pro. I know he's relatively a new guy, but I think this move, if you had to get him off to the side and you could get him to tell you the truth, I think he would say that he's a little disappointed, because I think he's the one that loses minutes the most in this deal.
Yeah, and how could you not be disappointed as a professional basketball player losing minutes?
I mean, have the other guys that you've had on, or if those guys have the same sort of opinion on that stuff, or have you heard something different than that? What would you think?
I haven't heard anything different than that. I mean, I've heard people talk about how they're still celebrating on the bench and being good teammates during the game. But there's human elements to this stuff that, it's great to be a part of a team and stuff like that. But you want to take shots. I mean, I play rec ball and I want to take shots. Yeah.
You want to be a contributor. And you're right. That's an excellent point about the bench. These guys genuinely seem really thrilled for each other. And I think part of that comes from the chemistry that Durant brings. This isn't part of our original conversation, but even when Durant's on the bench, and I think this is pretty much documented too, anybody can see this. He's the first one to jump out of his seat and high five somebody or cheer somebody on or get on to somebody too. Yeah. And I think the rest of the bench, if you see your best player who only comes out of the game because they can't play him 48 minutes. I guess they could, but you don't want to run him into the ground. But he'd play 48 minutes if he wanted, if he could. But the first guy off the bench and the one with the best attitude, the one that's all team, is your best player. Mm-hmm. Durant doesn't have to be that way. And if he wasn't that way, nobody would say a second thing about it. But if he's going to be that way, well, then crying out loud, Perry Jones and Jeremy Lamb and Hashim Thabeet, they need to be that way too. I think they sort of take a cue from him.
Do you think that Durant is the leader of the locker room, or do you see that being Derek Fisher's role or even Scott Brooks' role?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. It's hard to tell a lot of times. Durant is, in the limited time that we're allowed to kind of come and go in the locker room, whether that's before or after the game, I would say that Durant is the leader in the sense that he's the guy, he's the MVP of not only the league but the team. More than that, I think it's Kendrick Perkins to some extent because his experience, his toughness, he was on those really good Celtics teams. And I think that Russell Westbrook has a large say in the matter too. Hmm. I think it's those three guys and a little bit of Derek Fisher sprinkled in. But you don't see Fisher in the locker room very often. He's the last one to come in after the games. He takes an extra long time doing whatever he is that he's doing. Mm-hmm. And before the games, he's not very visible in there either.
Really? That's kind of surprising.
I don't know. I mean, well, surprising in the sense only because, well, if you sort of understand the way that the locker room process works, and for those listeners on your podcast that don't get it, is that the media is not allowed in there whenever they want to go in. It's, mm-hmm. it's not like Major League Baseball where, you know, you get to the park at 3 o'clock and guys sort of shuttle in and out of the locker room and they're playing cards and they're going to batting practice or whatever. The media is only allowed in the locker room from the essentially the hour and a half mark before tip off, 90 minutes before tip off, for the next 30 minutes before after that. So there's a time in there where it's open. However, and if it's open, you can walk in there and there's not seats or anything for us to sit in. But if you want to go talk to Jeremy Lamb, you talk to Jeremy Lamb. If he wants to talk to you, he does. Or if he doesn't want to talk to you, he'll say, hey, I'm not going to visit with the media. But if you're in the training room, which is off to the side of the locker room, which the media does not have access to, then the players are not required to talk to anybody, and the media is not allowed in there. So a lot of times players will hang out outside the locker room just so they can, well, frankly, so they can avoid the media.
Sure.
And Russell Westbrook spends a good portion of the time that we're allowed in the locker room
mm-hmm.
at his locker. But he puts his headphones on. He doesn't do any real interviews before the game. And when guys like Royce and I are in there, it's an information gathering time to some. But sometimes you just want to sort of observe them and see what they're doing. And, you know, talk to Reggie Jackson about why he eats a peanut butter sandwich before every game. To me, that's interesting. And to other people, it might not be, but he has that same sandwich before every game. And I like to see Lamb and Perry Jones joking around. They're always at their lockers beforehand. Derek Fisher, never, almost never there. Ibaka, almost never there. Sometimes you see Collison. But I think that these guys sort of hang off to the sides to – well, maybe they're getting treatment. I don't know, but maybe they're just there to avoid the media. But a guy like Tron Butler, he does a bunch of stretches, but he does it in the middle of the floor where if you want to go up to him, he makes himself very available as opposed to Westbrook, who puts his headphones on and that sort of sends a message that says, you know what, I'm getting ready to go to work. And you know what, if I was a player like that, I don't know that I'd want to talk to people either. So
sure.
I can't blame anybody for acting that way.
Yeah. Thanks for that. That's great insight.
Well, it's sort of interesting, I think, the whole idea that well, here's the deal. Here's a good way to put it. You cannot talk to Bob Stoops for about 3 days before they kick off against, what, Arkansas State or whoever they're going to play the first game of the season. The media is off limits. But you can literally talk to Kevin Durant 90 minutes before they play Game 7 against the Miami Heat in the NBA Finals. How crazy is that?
That is cool.
It's just weird to think that someone's going to come into your office and talk to you right before you go to work.
I mean,
we wouldn't want that. I mean, I don't want to talk to anybody before I've had at least a cup and a half of coffee, much less go to work. So
That's great.
It's an interesting culture, and it's a lot of fun to be part of, definitely.
Yeah, thanks for that insight. I mean, this I love it. So let's talk about concerns with this team heading into the playoffs. Okay. What are the major concerns, and what is going to keep this team from winning a title this year?
Probably a third party outside of Durant and outside of Westbrook, who, even though they've had those guys in the playoffs before, obviously not last year because Westbrook was out. We all know that. Probably don't need to go over that again. It's a sore spot still. Mm-hmm. But the fact that those guys have been on the team before, but these guys seem better than in the past. I think Durant understands the game better. I think he's an overall better player. I think he's a volume scorer as well as a guy that can make anybody better on any given night. And also Westbrook, who seems to be playing with way more attitude and energy and however else you want to describe it. I think those guys are going to really, really have great playoffs, and I think they're going to take it upon themselves to do everything possible. But if they don't have that third party, which has really been the whole problem with the Thunder since they've had Durant Westbrook, is who is going to be the consistent third scorer? Mm-hmm. James Harden has been that guy. Kevin Martin was supposed to be that guy. Is it Serge Ibaka? Is it Thabo? Is it Caron Butler? Is it Reggie Jackson? All those guys show up, but they don't show up consistently. And in the playoffs, Durant and Westbrook are going to have a hard time being defended, obviously. We know that. But they've got to get that other guy going, and I don't know who it is. I lean toward Ibaka, but I really, really want it to be Reggie Jackson because I think mm-hmm. he can be a real difference maker in the ability to create offense.
Yeah, I agree. And the
answer to the question is, I think it's going to be the lack of a third scorer will mm-hmm. keep them from getting that trophy at the end of the season.
And Reggie's shown up against the Spurs in particular.
He's had some great, great moments this year, but he's looked lost for months at a time, too.
He has. He plays well against the Spurs, and then mm-hmm. he doesn't play well against Detroit. And you're Toronto, like, what's going on here? Like,
I think part of it is, I do think that he's going to have a good playoffs because obviously Westbrook is not going to be restricted any. They don't play back-to-back games. Everybody's on an even amount, approximately even amount of rest, mm-hmm. assuming that, you play the same number of games. I think Reggie Jackson's more comfortable in his own skin, in his own situation, knowing that he's not the starter. Mm-hmm. Now, if he is the starter, and maybe he's a starter next season for, I don't know, let's throw it out there, Charlotte or somebody like that. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Then he's a different player. But even as a starter with the Thunder, I got the feeling he was looking over his shoulder. He was judged more harshly. Kevin Durant was visibly on him on a number of games this season. Scott Brooks was a guy who is calm and collected on the sidelines, was often visibly shaken by what what Jackson did. But off the bench, I think Rich Jackson plays with more energy. I think he provides natural scoring. And what he does better than anyone on the team outside of Durant and Westbrook, I think, is get to the basket. Mm-hmm. Serge is a great defender. Obviously, he alters all sorts of shots, rebounds, block shots, all sorts of that stuff. But he can't create a shot the same way Reggie Jackson can. And he's Russell Westbrook light. He does mm-hmm. everything Westbrook does, just not at the exact same speed or efficiency. But as a bench player, you can't ask for much more than that. He's instant offense off the bench, and he can control the team if he needs to.
Yeah, and another factor is he's playing for some serious cash this playoffs. I mean, he's on the main stage looking for a bigger contract.
And not only that, is he has as much to lose as he has to gain, because if he doesn't mm-hmm. show up in the playoffs, then people think, well, I don't know if I want to make this guy my point guard. I don't know if I want him to lead my team. And I think he's had those moments this year where he's looked like the part early in the season, right before Westbrook went out. Reggie Jackson was phenomenal in the early part of the season.
Right.
Westbrook goes out and he's a starter, and Jackson's shooting percentage drops way off. His confidence was off, and I talked to him a lot about this last week. He's one of my favorite people to talk to in the locker room. I feel like he's very honest and forthright. And he said he sort of got down on himself, and he doubted himself, and he has been a lot more comfortable lately, and I believe him when he says that.
Yeah. Kevin Durant is going to be the MVP of the whole league, which is just crazy to think about.
Hard to imagine, isn't it? It's hard to even just to wrap your mind around.
Yeah. Spend some time talking about what that means to this city and to this franchise.
Well, in the same way, Blake Griffin is going to be he's going to be first team all NBA. And I think that means something to Oklahoma City too. If there was no Thunder, in other words, if there were Sonics and Durant was off doing his thing, we'd still appreciate him, there's no doubt. But we'd say Blake Griffin is one of the five best NBA players in the world.
Hmm.
One of the five best basketball players in the world.
Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing for guys like you and me who sort of watched him either up close or from afar or read about him growing up. Playing basketball at high school in Edmond, at OCS, and then going to OU, and you're like, hey, he's just a good player. But what Durant has done is make Oklahoma City viable internationally. People all over the world know who he is. Oklahoma City is one of, what, 28 teams in the world that gets their name across the scroll every night on ESPN. And not just Durant being great, but the it sounds bad to say this, but how lucky Oklahoma City is to have him.
Yeah.
If they had the number one pick, they might have picked Greg Oden. They might have picked Durant. Who knows? But they probably would have picked Oden because he seemed like the better bet at the time. And I don't blame Portland, but you get Greg Oden, and it sets your franchise back 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oklahoma City gets Durant, and they become viable immediately. He's a superstar. A lot of that is on him, but he seems to be a great representative of the city. He seems to be a superstar with no baggage or flaws that we know of. I'm sure there's stuff there that maybe it comes out, maybe it doesn't. I don't know, but none of us are perfect. But unlike Kobe Bryant, who was a malcontent a lot of the time, unlike Michael Jordan, who didn't get along with teammates, unlike Will Chamberlain, that nobody liked, really, Durant is the rare superstar with nothing sort of holding him back. He seems to make teammates better. He seems to smile. He doesn't seem to be down about himself. He doesn't have issues like LeBron James did when he switched teams and people disliked him for whatever reason. Durant has none of that.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing holding Durant back is that he hasn't won a championship, but no one even holds that against him. So to have that guy, that kind of superstar that you don't have to make excuses for, in Oklahoma City is a benefit beyond, other than maps, literally, other than maps, the maps project, you know, the tax bond, in the last 20 years, what's been more significant in Oklahoma City? You could literally make a case that Kevin Durant's the most important thing in Oklahoma City in the last 20 years.
Yeah, Kevin Durant, oil, and maps.
And maybe Bob Stoops is a close third or fourth, and it's sad to say, but when the Sooners play well, it helps the economy.
Mm-hmm.
It helps the university. It helps the economy, and I think Durant, being the way he is, makes people, you know, it makes people proud in Oklahoma City, which is fine. But I think it makes Oklahoma City sort of international in a lot of ways too.
Yeah, without a doubt. I love the way that you put that. I've asked that question to several people today, and that's probably my favorite way that I've heard, you know, that put. So let's do some playoff predictions. Let's go ahead and skip the first and second rounds. I think it'll be.
Oh, you're just assuming right into the Western Conference Finals, I guess, huh?
Yes. Let's get to it. Let's get down to it.
Well,
tell me who's in the West.
Take your foam finger off for a second. So you're just telling me right now that the Thunder are going to make the Western Conference Finals.
Well, not necessarily, but I want you to tell me who you're picking for the Western Conference Finals.
Okay. I will take. Boy, you know what? This is the honest truth. I have not thought about it past the first round. I do think that Thunder get by. Oh, when's this airing? Can we even say that at this point? Do we know when you're going to put this out there?
Yes, Tuesday. Tuesday.
Okay,
this week.
Before the season. Okay, so good. I don't have to make any sort of assumptions at this point. And I think it's going to be Memphis. We're talking on Monday night. Now, Memphis and Phoenix are getting ready to play for that last spot. If Memphis wins, I think they clinch, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I think Memphis is going to get in. I think they're going to win tonight in Phoenix. And I think it'll be Dallas. There's a long shot it could be Golden State, but Thunder don't want anything to do with Golden State. And we sort of overlook Dallas because, well, they're old and all this other stuff, but they're like 17 games over 500.
Yeah,
that's
the
seventh seed in the West. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And they've clinched
greatest
already.
Players of all time.
So
I would not want to mess with Dirk Nowitzki either, but I do think the Thunder will get by Dallas. So I'll suggest, I'll say Dallas in the first round. And it's going to be Clippers and Golden State. I think Golden State beats the Clippers. I think Golden State's a little bit under the radar. I don't think they're as hot as they were last year. And I think a lot of people are on the Clippers.
Mm.
I'm going to take Golden State in the second round over the Clippers. And I think the Thunder will get to the Western Conference Finals, but they're going to beat Golden State to do it.
Ooh, nice. I like that prediction.
A little bit different. A little bit different. I love Chris Paul. Naturally, I'm a huge Blake Griffin fan for reasons that we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Jordan. I think he's been phenomenal. They have all the right pieces, but I think the whole world is going to be on the Clippers to win that series. And I think Golden State's – listen, you can play all the defense you want. If Steph Curry makes 10 three-pointers in a game, you're done. I mean, he's able to do that. He's one of those guys that can do that.
That's going to be an incredible series. I'm so
excited
to watch that.
That leaves San Antonio.
Yeah.
boy, I'm just not going to pick against them until they're 5 years removed from Tim Duncan being there, which may be, we may be done and gone before Tim Duncan.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to argue against that.
I'm not going to do it. I just won't do it. And every year that OU plays Texas in the Cotton Bowl, I always pick the team that won the year before. That's the only sort of variable that I have. That's the only way I can pick that stuff, and I'll never pick against the Spurs until there's no Duncan or Parker, Ginobili, or, you know, even past that, I may never pick.
Yeah, because they've been proving people wrong for 5 or 6 years now.
Maybe longer.
Okay, in the East, who do you have in the Eastern Conference Finals?
I like Chicago a lot. Mm-hmm. I like, let's see, so Indiana and Miami, we still don't know who's going to get number one. And
Indy just clinched the first seed.
Oh, they did. Did Miami lose? That means that,
yes.
Miami lost.
They lost to Washington tonight.
Oh yeah, I saw that they were losing by 20. They gave up 70 in the first half to Washington. Okay. Now I'm not going to suggest that that's some sort of indicator of how Miami plays in the playoffs. I think they're just trying to get done with the regular season. Honestly, yeah. I like Miami in the Western Conference Finals. They'll be a two, so they'll avoid Chicago, I think, as a four. So I'm going to say Miami and Chicago, and then Chicago beating the Pacers in the Eastern Conference semifinals. I really wanted the Knicks to get in, just because, good or bad, they're a circus and they're fun to watch.
Yeah.
Just because they're just, I mean, you just watch the Knicks and you're like, wow, we could have that sort of team in Oklahoma City and it'll just be miserable. So we're very lucky in that regard. But I think the Nets will give some teams some trouble. So I'll say Chicago. And tell me if my seedings are off, if this couldn't happen.
You're right so far.
I think Chicago could play Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals, and the whole world will want Chicago to win that.
Yes.
I just don't think they can do it. So
yeah.
I'll just be boring and pick the Heat to win the East.
Okay.
Do I have to say Thunder or Spurs at this point?
I
have to say Thunder or Spurs at this point, I'm going to go Spurs.
Okay.
I think that they're going to get them this year.
Okay. And so who's your champ?
Oh boy, that'd be Spurs and Heat. That's so lame. I just picked the one. The one and the two. Essentially, it's the one and the one. I'd go Spurs this year just because, they were only a Ray Allen shot away last year. At the beginning of the season, and this is documented, you can go back and look at this. Fox Southwest, I had Indiana and Golden State in the championship. So that could still certainly happen. That's not that out. It'd be harder for Golden State to get there, but I thought Golden State would be a three seed, maybe a four at worst.
Oh, yeah.
But they still are 15, 20 games over 500, whatever they are. So it's not like they've had a bad season.
And I guess Bogut's out. Bogut had a bad injury, which is pretty bad for them.
But then again, when has he ever been healthy for more than a five-game stretch?
This is true.
He was really good in the NCAA tournament against the Sooners. I remember that when Utah beat OU. But,
yep.
I don't remember him being a force much for any extended period of time anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. We appreciate you being on here. This is one of my favorite interviews that I've done today. So thanks for your time. Tell us your Twitter handle so I don't get it wrong.
It's at Andrew Gilman, G-I-L-M-A-N, okay.
Okay. Please follow this guy. Hilarious. One of the best follows for Thunder basketball. Andrew, have a great night.
Okay. Thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. Next on our plate for interviews as part of our postseason podcast is Eli Friedman from Yahoo.com. You can see him on Twitter at Eli_NBA OKC. Eli is kind of a prodigy in the NBA writer and media world. Eli, how old are you now?
I'm 16.
16, man. How's school going?
It's going great. It's going great. Busy with ACT work, so it's hard to balance the playoffs with work, but I love it, so I love it.
Hey, man, we have many of our listeners often comment on your your skill, number one, but also they enjoy when you do interviews because, you bring some good stuff, but you also have a good radio voice, man. So you may want to think about that as your next step, too.
definitely. I'm going to – when I pick a school, I'm definitely going to go into broadcast journalism. So playing the cards as they come and seeing what my future holds. So we'll see.
Seems like Northwestern's the one that, you know, a lot of the popular people I hear about going to.
Yeah, yeah. It's Syracuse also, good communication school.
Well, cool. Let's. We've got some Thunder questions, and we've got some postseason playoff prediction questions, and kind of looking at the Thunder going into that. So let's get rolling on some of these questions. The first question I have is, give me three significant points or significant moments that you take from the 2013-2014 regular NBA season.
Wow. So
For the Thunder.
So there were a lot of key moments, and I try not to get too caught up in the regular season, because I feel like you got to play your best basketball at the right time. So if you're having a bad regular season, like, you know, the Heat aren't always clicking a lot in the regular season, but they start to get it going at the right time in the playoffs. So it's hard to take too much of the regular season. But for the Thunder this year, I think going 4-0 against the Spurs in the season series is crucial. I think that gives them a lot of confidence going into the playoffs, because they couldn't get the one seed because San Antonio played great basketball during the regular season. So, I mean, I think Kevin and Russell and the guys, they're not too worried about the Spurs. They went 4-0 against them this year, which was, I think that was pretty vital for the Thunder. I love the Caron Butler signing. I thought that was pretty significant. Another veteran guy into the locker room who's been playing great for the Thunder lately. He's giving about 13 points sometimes and coming off the bench, hitting some threes. And we know yesterday against Indiana, the Thunder were terrible from three. So Butler will be critical down the stretch. And Scott Brooks likes having veteran guys on the floor. So late in games, you may see a lineup with Westbrook, Butler, Durant, Ibaka, and Jackson, which would be kind of an interesting lineup. I love the another significant point would probably be the Thunder win in Miami on January 29th. That I feel like that game was big for KD's movement to win the MVP this year. That was just a big game in Miami where Durant and LeBron just went back and forth, and the Thunder won the game by about 20. And that was just a big win for the Thunder, their confidence, and for Durant going through the year.
Absolutely. I think that I forget about those moments like that. That was such a big game. And you saw big moments in that game from guys like Jeremy Lamb. And I know Fisher, it was kind of the first real game I noticed about how good he was this year for the Thunder. Because it's one of the more understated as far as national is how good Derek Fisher's been. And he, in that Heat game especially, was a piece. I think he was 5 of 5 from the 3-point.
Yeah, yeah, and he hit that.
So did your expectations?
The big bank three to end the quarter there, the first quarter, if you remember that.
Yep, a momentum shifter, man. That's what he does. Yeah. So did your expectations going into the regular season, I don't know if you set a kind of expected win total like that, but were your expectations for this year's Thunder team, were they exceeded? Were they just kind of right at? Were they let down? What were your expectations going into the season, and how did the Thunder match up to those?
Yeah, so I think I came on earlier in the season onto the show, and you asked me if I predict a 60-win season, and right now the Thunder are at 58, and they got two games to go against not-so-great teams, against the Pelicans tonight, and then Detroit on Wednesday. So I said they would get to a 60-win season, so they're right about there. This season, I couldn't wait, you know, because you got Westbrook coming back, a disappointment last year with him going down in the playoffs. So him coming back, I was really excited, and I didn't expect this whole injury situation with him getting hurt with the increased swelling and him having to sit on back-to-backs and sit in the middle of the year. But so I think all Thunder fans were expecting a fully healthy Russ and the team to be back at full strength, which they haven't been, you know, with Tabo and Perk and Russ being out for a little bit. It's been a little shaky with the lineup here and there. So that was a little unexpected, but I think the Thunder, with their injuries and having to deal with adversity, I think they right where I wanted them to be going into playoff time.
That's great. So do you have any kind of thoughts? Let's talk a little bit about Kevin Durant's season. Incredible year for Durant, and I don't know if you've read the article, but I know Bill Simmons posted an article the other day talking about the MVP and how people may look back and just say this was a year where people became bored of LeBron, and so they voted Durant in, kind of like what happened to Jordan a few times, and he didn't lose it. But what does Kevin Durant's season mean to this Oklahoma City Thunder team? And maybe even more personally, what does that mean to Kevin Durant and his place in basketball
history, basketball lore, if you will.
Yeah, I think it means a lot, and I think it means a lot for Kevin himself. I think it means a lot for this Thunder team and for the whole NBA in general, and I'll tell you why. And it's because Durant's been a little frustrated. You know, that Sports Illustrated article last year came out about him being second, and him being frustrated with that. LeBron's always been the top guy since Durant's been in the league, so for him to get over the edge this year kind of says something, and his year, Durant's this year, has been unbelievable. We had the 41 straight games with 25 or more points. He's had 46 games with 30 or more points. And at this rate, he will become just the fourth player in league history to average at least 32 points, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists. He's on pace to set a career high in assists at 5.6. And he's second in the league in small forwards and rebounding at 7.6, which is his highest of his career, which is pretty remarkable. So this year for KD has been unbelievable, and you got to give him props not only for his numbers, but how he's dealt with the guys like Russ and Perk and Tabo being out and filling that void. So and taking more on the shoulder. And for the NBA, I mean, I think it's great, and I'll tell you why. It's because you have in the past you've had guys like Magic and Bird and Jordan and Malone going at it, and now you have this matchup with LeBron and KD. That's where the NBA makes their money, you know. This matchup between Durant and LeBron will go on for, I don't know, it could be in another decade, and it's fun to watch, you know, them going back and forth. We know that Magic and Larry Bird, they went at it for years in the 80s, so Durant and LeBron, they're going to go at it for a while now.
I agree with that. I love what it means for Durant, because it's that, you know, there was even conversation that bled into this year and early in the season where is Paul George the second best player? And this just solidifies the fact that it's 1A and 1B, and then it's the rest of the NBA. And Durant has elevated his game at every single, as you said, every single part of his game has become better this year than it has been in his career. And he's still not fully into the prime of his career, is the terrifyingly awesome thing about Kevin Durant.
Yeah, he hasn't even hit a ceiling yet, which is, like you said, that's amazing. And I mean, I don't know how anyone can argue that KD is not the MVP this year.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can realistically do that. So let's move on a little bit to playoffs. Have a couple questions as far as that, and the first one is: do you have any concerns for the Oklahoma City Thunder as they go into the playoffs this year?
Yeah, I think the number one concern is health. It's so critical in the NBA. You know, you play so many games, and health is just it's vital. And right now, you have Westbrook, you know, sitting on back to back. So the playoffs, it's a long grind. So hopefully, Russ will be all right. And then you had Perk and Tabo back into the lineup, but Perk's playing restricted minutes, and Tabo's starting to get back into his groove. So and then you got Reggie, who hurt his neck on a screen yesterday. So he had an X-ray, and multiple sources in the Thunder organization said that the X-ray went well. So I'm hoping he'll be back for playoff time, and I think he will. I'm not sure if he'll play against the Pelicans tonight. No official word on that yet. So if that's a concern for the Thunder is being healthy, and we know last year that hurt not being healthy with Westbrook out. So this year it's got to be their year. So if they can stay healthy, that'd be big. And the second one has got to be Serge Ibaka. He's hit or miss. He's had a lot of double doubles this year, but yesterday against Indiana, just 4 for 11 from the floor with 11 points and 6 rebounds. I mean, that's just not going to get it done. So health and Serge Ibaka's production are two concerns for me heading down into the playoffs.
So do you think that these recent kind of struggles they've had as far as defense, perimeter defense, and some of these late game scoring moments, do you think any of that stuff is something to worry about, or do you think that's just kind of regular season woes that kind of happen as the season progresses?
Yeah, I think it's just if you ask me, like, those, you're going to think I'm crazy, but those poor defensive adjustments and rotations and slow rotations and not getting out on shooters, for a majority of that time, Tabo and Perk were at the end of the bench in suits when that was going on. I mean, now that they're back, the defense has been a lot better, and I really do think that's in part of Cephalosha and Perkins. They do a great job communicating on the defensive end, and they really help on the defensive end.
Yeah, I think people come to realize and appreciate who those two guys are way more whenever they're gone than they do when they're on the court.
They do the little things that mean a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit more about playoffs, and we can talk predictions. And so I have three kind of phases of predictions. I want to see who you think the Thunder play in the first round, which means who gets the 7, who gets the 8. And then we're going to talk conference finals, and then we're going to talk NBA finals. So let's start with the 8 and 7 seed in the West. Who do you think gets the 8? Who gets the 7? So who do the matchups go to?
First of all, can we just acknowledge how awesome it is how the NBA perfectly scheduled this?
Yeah, it's insane. I can't believe it that they
Phoenix
have.
Yeah. And Memphis playing tonight, and Phoenix right now is a game out of the playoffs at the 9th spot right now. So Phoenix and Memphis tonight. And with a win tonight, if the Suns win tonight, you got a tie for the 8th spot. And then you have Memphis plays Dallas on Wednesday night. So, I mean, I wrote an article yesterday previewing a Thunder Mavericks series, and the Thunder are actually 1-2 against the Mavericks this year, which is shocking. But those two games, the Thunder didn't have their starting five, and Westbrook couldn't play in that overtime. He only played a minute in that overtime, if you remember, in one of those games. So I don't think that's a big concern against Dallas. So I think the Thunder will play Dallas. Not a big reason for concern. I think it would be a shame if Phoenix didn't get into the playoffs. Now, they had a remarkable season, and they're so well coached, so I would love to see them get into the playoffs. But I think the Thunder will play Dallas.
So then I'm assuming you have Oklahoma City winning that series. Who is your conference finals in the Western and the Eastern conferences?
I have the Thunder and Spurs in the Western Conference, and I have the Thunder winning in 6. And if you remember, in 2012, the Thunder were actually the 2 seed. So we're the 2 seed and beat the Spurs. Remember James Harden's big 3 and late in that game in San Antonio in game 5, if you remember that. That was a moment I'll always remember. And then I actually have the Pacers beating the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, and the Thunder playing the Pacers in the Finals. With the Pacers winning the series.
Oh, the Pacers winning the championship this year.
Yes.
I'll just attribute that more than anything to the fact that you didn't want to go full on Homer in that. And so you really think the Thunder will win, but you're just going to go ahead and say the Pacers for neutrality. Well, great, man. Well, Eli, we always appreciate you and what you do, your work that you do online, but also we appreciate just your presence on our podcast, and we appreciate it, and we hope that your predictions all the way up until the finals are accurate, and then we hope that the Thunder one is not accurate in the finals. That we would appreciate a nice parade here in Oklahoma City.
Hey, you know who I'm rooting for, so
absolutely.
Thank you for having me on the show once again.
We always appreciate you, man. We'll see you next time.
All right, see you later.
I'd like to welcome my favorite Thunder writer, and I think he's the best writer for Oklahoma City, for the Thunder, Royce Young. Welcome back to the podcast.
That's high praise. Too high of praise, I say.
I could argue with you about this all day. I honestly love reading your stuff. If you're listening to this podcast, you obviously have visited Daily Thunder. I mean, you should visit it every day. It's honestly my favorite Thunder website.
I don't disagree with what he's saying, everyone. Everyone should do exactly what he's
So the playoffs start this week, which is super cool. I'm really excited. I mean, meaningful basketball is going to happen again. It's going to be great. But this season has kind of been a whirlwind season. Can you kind of target maybe 3 or 4 points in the season that have been the most significant for this Thunder team?
Yeah, I probably you could really just circle them around Russell Westbrook. You know, I think that when he first had his first arthroscopic surgery, that was kind of a touchstone moment. Then he returned in the third game of the season after they got blown out by the Timberwolves, 181. I remember that game. That game was disgusting and gross. Then Russell Westbrook comes back. They play really well for a big run. Then Christmas Day, he has the triple-double, and then he goes out again. And then I think where the Thunder season really turned was that second half in Houston where they held him to 19 points. That really kind of got them on track. Kevin Durant went on that ridiculous 30-point streak where he scored a 30 in 12 straight games. And then Russell Westbrook came back. So it's really just kind of the timeline is kind of set up to where Russell Westbrook was out, Russell Westbrook came back, he was out, and he came back. And that's kind of where the season was.
Yeah, another thing that happened that was pretty significant was the addition of Caron Butler. And it really affected a lot of guys on the team and playing time and stuff like that. How do you think the team has adjusted to the addition of Caron Butler?
You know, honestly, with two games left in the regular season, I still don't know if it was necessarily a great move. And I think that we're only going to be able to find that out with how he plays in the postseason. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I know that Jeremy Lamb had struggled since really that Miami game where he played so well, had 17. I think he hit 4 of 6 from three in that game. But he hadn't shot the ball well really since the All-Star break. And, you know, when you're going into the postseason, I think that it was a big ask of Jeremy Lamb to really kind of expect him to snap out of a shooting slump and produce, you know, a guy that's in his second season. So, you know, I can understand why the Thunder might have been a little bit hesitant to want to, you know, lean on Jeremy Lamb for the postseason. But at the same time, I think that we're going to have to wait and see whether or not Caron Butler's addition is really good. Because like you said, man, once they added him, it's really shuffled things around. You know, we haven't seen any of Perry Jones. We definitely have, you know, it's obvious that Jeremy Lamb is outside of the rotation when they're completely healthy. And, you know, it's kind of remains to be seen how Tabo Cephalosha even fits in, in terms of crunch time minutes and lineups and rotations. So, I think that adding Caron Butler was good. You saw it a little bit yesterday against the Pacers, scored 9 quick points to start the fourth quarter. The guy can play. It's just going to be a question of, you know, is he in at the right moments and can he knock down the big shots?
Yeah. And you know that Brooks is going to go with him over anybody just because Brooks trusts Beck. And I mean, it's kind of a same deal with Fisher. I think we're going to see a lot of those guys in the postseason.
Yeah, there's no question. You know, I think that, you know, we've kind of taken around here to calling Caron Butler just a bigger version of Derek Fisher. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I think that that's what he really is. He's just a taller, bigger, stronger Derek Fisher. And, you know, I think that there will be games, there will be probably 3 or 4 postseason games where we're all banging our heads against a wall wondering why Derek Fisher is out there. And we might wonder the same thing with Caron Butler. You know, if he's missing crunch time shots or he's in a defensive matchup that doesn't make sense, I could see us very, very much wondering why in the heck he's out there.
Do you think that there'll be this will be a 9-man rotation in the playoffs and you just take away Steven Adams and Jeremy Lamb from the equation, you know, altogether? Or do you think it's going to be matchup based? How do you see that playing out?
That's a good question. You know, I think that, you know, the common thinking in the NBA is that you shorten your rotation for the postseason. But I think one of the Thunder's strengths this season has been their depth, particularly when they've been healthy. I think we saw that in a very big way, especially in November and December before Westbrook went out the first time. It seemed like the Thunder really kind of got into a rhythm with their second unit. And, you know, that group was not just keeping them in games. You know, I thought that they were winning them games in a lot of ways. So, you know, I think that Steven Adams, you know, depending on the first round matchup, if they play the Suns in the first round, Steven Adams, I don't think will play a minute. Mm-hmm. If they play the Grizzlies, Steven Adams will have a big role. If they play the Mavericks, I don't know if he'll play. He probably will see a little bit of time, but not much, which honestly kind of brings me back to, this is off topic, but a different point, but something that's always bothered me. I find it funny a lot of times with Scott Brooks, and this is one of my biggest issues with him, is that how he basically shows his hand by not playing Steven Adams in a certain matchup. Mm-hmm. You know, say they're playing the Suns or the Mavericks and Steven Adams doesn't see any time on the floor because both those teams don't play a traditional big, but yet he still will start Kendrick Perkins and play him for 14 to 18 minutes while acknowledging by not playing his backup center that Steven Adams does not make sense for this matchup. So I'm not going to play him any, but I'll still play Kendrick Perkins because he's my starting center. And that's just what we do. And that it's that sort of thing. I think you were going to see that type of thing in the playoffs that Steven Adams may not play in a series, but Kendrick Perkins will still get his minutes.
Yeah. Brooks is a good locker room coach, but do you think that he worries about that stuff too much or places too much of an emphasis on that with doing things like playing Perkins 14 minutes? Do you think that's what that move is?
I think that Scott Brooks, you know, he said it before that he thinks he's a, you know, he basically said that he's really good with chemistry. And I think that that's where he kind of thinks he's making his money as a, as an NBA head coach, is by trying to keep a locker room that's together and likes each other. But you know, I think that you can kind of go too far in some ways. You know, it's the type of thing where, you know, you don't always want to be told, you know, your real true friends and the people that really care about you, when they quit telling you the things that you want to hear and they tell you the things that you need to hear. Right. Yeah. And I think that sometimes Scott Brooks can kind of make that mistake, that he's, it's like, he's trying to make sure that everybody on the team likes him a little too much, instead of maybe completely grabbing their complete respect by just making the decisions that matter. At times he's done that. You know, people forget game 6 against the Rockets, he didn't start Kendrick Perkins to start the second half, and Perk didn't play any in that second half when they clinched against the Rockets. Did the same thing against the Heat in the first matchup this season. You know, didn't start Perk in the second half. I think Scott Brooks is sometimes willing to make those decisions, but for whatever reason, he just doesn't seem like he wants to go all in with them, because I think he values, probably overvalues, his team kind of trying to manifest this chemistry and togetherness a little too much. When I think that I don't think it's necessary to do that anymore, because, you know, when you've got a good team like this, they should all trust each other and they should trust their head coach empirically, you know, trust the head coach more than anyone else. And I think sometimes Scott Brooks doesn't quite trust in his own team enough to trust him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I like Brooks as a coach, but there is like that 15% of the things that he does that I don't understand. And I feel like a lot of fans are like this. They think, like, I could do a better job in these like three or four areas than Scott Brooks could. And I know that's not true, because I know he knows way more about basketball than I will ever know, but it just feels that way.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you know, you listen to like his, you know, mic'd up segment yesterday against the Pacers, and you sit there and you wonder to yourself, like, really, this is an NBA coach? This is what an NBA coach tells his team? But, you know, I feel like every time that Mike Breen, he's noted this like three or four times, that, you know, we can't show you the strategy and we can't show you the real. I feel like he's only ever said that after a Scott Brooks mic'd up segment. Because I feel like every time I've heard him say that, it's like he's trying to kind of like make Scotty Brooks feel a little bit better about what he said. Because all Scott Brooks basically said against the Pacers yesterday was like, guys, we need to play basketball. Like, that's essentially what he said.
Make sure you score more points than the other guys.
He said something about 27 points, which I don't know what he was saying there, but yeah.
Okay, so tell me the areas of concern. We've touched on this a little bit with the Brooks stuff, but tell me some other areas of concern heading into the postseason for this particular Thunder team.
Well, I think everybody, you know, is looking at them on the defensive end, and because they've just kind of been so inconsistent. I think the two games that stick out a lot, though, is the Spurs game and then obviously in against the Clippers, where I think the team showed what they are capable of defensively when they really lock in and focus up and put in the effort and the time to really play on that end of the floor. Because, you know, there's been times, and I think that this is just a casualty of the Thunder's defensive philosophy, that they do allow too many open jumpers. And, you know, what the way that they play defensively is that they like to pressure the ball, probably too much in some regards. They really hedge out on pick and rolls. They try to get into ball handlers, and it gives up a little bit of dribble penetration. And their feeling is, well, we can trust in our length and our size, you know, guys like Cephalosha and Durant, that, you know, we can then recover back, you know, after they help down, they can recover back to a shooter and get a good contest in. And if the guy goes all the way to the rim, then Serge Ibaka will be there to clean it up for us. Sometimes I think that they fall into a little bit of a bad habit where they just kind of trust in that stuff too much. And unless that they're really keyed up and really playing hard, they give up too many open shots. And so, you know, I would assume that that's not going to be that big of an issue in the postseason, because they should be fired up for all those games and there shouldn't be any lapses. But, you know, I think that that's been the big thing that everybody's, you know, kind of noticed over the past couple of weeks, is that, you know, at times they're just a little too inconsistent on the defensive end. You know, everybody loves to focus on the offensive side and how Westbrook and Durant are playing together and who's taking shots in crunch time and what kind of stuff are they running. I don't think that that stuff matters near as much as it does if they're playing good defense, because if they're playing good defense, Westbrook and Durant are going to get you enough buckets.
Yeah, definitely. Is Reggie Jackson okay? Has that been confirmed yet?
No, we don't know. You know, he had some preliminary x-rays. I would assume he's fine, though. But, you know, if anything, it would probably be just a little neck strain type of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of interesting tonight, though. You know, if Jackson's out, Westbrook's already out because this is a back-to-back. So I guess we'll be seeing Derek Fisher start at point guard, which will be just a thrill for everyone.
He hasn't been a point guard since, like, 2007, I feel like.
Yeah, I would. That's something I'll have to look up. It's like, when is the last time Derek Fisher started a game at point guard? I mean, I obviously probably for the Lakers in 2011, maybe?
Yeah.
2012?
But, still Lamar Odom was more of a point guard then than he was.
Yes. I mean,
I think
thought of Derek Fisher starting is...
It could have been when he played for the Jazz was like the last real point guard experience that he had.
Because I remember when he was with the Lakers before they traded him to the Rockets for that brief moment.
Yes.
He was still... I want to say he was in and out as a starter. I can't quite remember. I think it was one of those things where, like, it was kind of a Kendrick Perkins situation that it was like, he's been our starter for a long time and we kind of need – he's kind of like our guy. And, like, we're trying to kind of, like, edge him out of the starting five. We don't quite know how to do it without trading him.
Yeah. With all this said, I think he's been awesome a lot of this season, and which is just surprising. But I've loved seeing him on the court. I think he's done a lot of really good things, and hopefully he doesn't run out of gas during the postseason.
You know, I think that's the thing. I think over the past couple of weeks, he's looked a little bit tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a credit to Derek Fisher. You know, I've ragged on the guy quite a bit, but I don't have much of anything negative to say about the way he's played this season. He's knocked down the open shots when he's got them. He's knocked down terrible shots that he's taken. he's notorious for taking horrible contested threes, and he's made a bunch of those. And he's played really pretty solid defense. And yep. I think that that's maybe kind of what's worn him down is he's maybe played a little bit too hard at times. You know, I just hope that he is going to be ready and healthy and rested up for the postseason. You know, it's the type of thing that, you know, the Thunder can't mess around too much. Their magic number is one to lock up that number two seed. And they've got two very easy games ahead against the Pelicans and the Pistons. But at the same time, you kind of want to try to rest yourself. That's why, you know, a guy like Fisher, maybe you don't throw him out there for 25, 30 minutes tonight. Mm-hmm. You kind of let him take a break. I mean, the guy is almost 40 years old.
Right.
So, you know, maybe you play Jeremy Lamb at point guard for most of this game. Maybe you try that out.
Yeah, I think he should. I think Lamb has shown to have, you know, some decent floor skills too. So I'd like to see more of that, you know, before we don't see any of it at all until next year.
Yeah, that's one of been the areas that I think that Jeremy Lamb has been really underrated. You know, everybody kind of advertised him as a spot-up shooter, which he is. You know, he's a good shooter, but I think he's great with the ball in his hands. I think he's great in a two-man game, running pick and roll. He's a good decision maker, makes smart passes. With his size, he's able to kind of pass over and around people. You know, I think that – and then, you know, he's a threat to shoot on you. So, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of put the defense in a difficult position – when Lamb's got the ball, because they need to, they can't go under a screen because he can stop and he can shoot on you. Mm-hmm. And then he's, you know, I think that the area that Lamb really has to improve is taking the ball to the bucket. You know, I remember when he was at UConn, he was terrific with both the left hand and the right hand with floaters and kind of runners in the lane. He hasn't really kind of got that stuff going in the NBA. I don't know if it's the extra size or length or speed of the game or whatever, but he really hasn't been able to knock that stuff down. And I think that that's where he needs to go. Able to attack the basket a little more, get to the free throw line, because I think from the mid range and 3-point line, I think he's good enough there.
Yeah.
It's just kind of taking those steps in the other areas.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see a lot of him in the next few days. So the MVP is in Oklahoma City, which is really one of the coolest things that's happened in my lifetime. What does this mean to the city, the franchise, and just to the NBA as a whole?
I mean, it's kind of incredible to think about, no question. And yeah, I mean, we all understand at this point that Kevin Durant's going to win the MVP. At this point, I think the biggest question is how many folks out there are going to be crazy enough to give LeBron James even a first place vote, which is really weird to think about. I mean, LeBron's probably going to get 20 first place votes or something, you know, because he's LeBron and people respect him and people are still clinging to the fact that he's still the best player in the world, which therefore means he should be the MVP. But even at this point, I think that Kevin Durant has made a decent case for, you know, if we're looking at this season in a vacuum and just what they did this season, you know, Kevin Durant played better and he was the better player. And I think that, you know, thinking about Oklahoma City and this franchise having the league's best player at this present moment, mean, that's a special thing right there. Mm-hmm. And I don't think at any point Thunder fans have taken Kevin Durant for granted. I don't think that's ever happened. But it is the type of thing where you do have to try to kind of step back and really try to put things in perspective and understand, like, this guy plays in our city. You know, we have the best player in the NBA currently playing in our city. One of the top players in all of professional sports. I mean, this is one of the great players right here. You know, future NBA legend. And, you know, whether he stays or whether he doesn't, the 7 or 8 years that he gave us were really special. And I think that we all just need to realize that Kevin Durant is something that, you know, that you really have to kind of cherish.
Yeah. I couldn't have said it better. I'm excited to watch him this postseason. I feel like he's grown as a player, and I'm excited to see that growth in the playoffs. And with that said, let's make some playoff predictions. Who do you see in the conference finals in the West and in the East?
Yeah, I think I'll start with the East, I guess, because that's easy. I still think it's the Pacers in the Heat. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that when Indiana can play to their potential, I think some of the pressure of being a contender kind of got to them. I think that they started reading their own headlines a little too much, feeling too good about themselves. I think that then they also put a little too much pressure on themselves to get that number one overall seed. When things started feeling bad, I think that they just didn't quite, you know, pay attention to their own business enough. I think that they started kind of looking and seeing what other people are doing. I think that they got, you know, Roy Hibbert, for as much as I love him, he's got too big of a mouth. And, I think that, you know, one of the things that the Pacers were really good about last season, you know, I remember that game, I think it was maybe after they won their second round series against the Knicks, that they, all five starters came to the podium together. And that's kind of what they tried to advertise themselves as. But I think that they've had too many locker room issues. I think that they've kind of been sniping at each other a little too much. But I still think, you know, just the state of the East, you know, the Nets have played wonderfully. The Raptors, I think, can be dangerous. And the Bulls, too, with the way that they play defense. And then a couple of first-round matchups. You know, I think the Bobcats could give somebody trouble because of the way Al Jefferson's played. But I still think it's Pacers Heat. And then in the West, I just don't see any way that we could get around the Spurs and Thunder meeting each other again. Mm-hmm. I think the Clippers can give Oklahoma City a lot of trouble. I think that series would probably go 6 or 7, and every game would be painfully close. But I think home court will make a big difference in that. And, you know, I just think the fact that the Clippers, you know, it's been their struggle in the postseason before, that, you know, Doc Rivers has improved upon it a lot in what they run in their half-court sets, and the evolution of Blake Griffin helps a whole lot too. But the postseason is more physical, fewer touch stuff gets called, and, you know, I think the Clippers, you know, their crunch time half-court offense, when all else fails, you know, when there's 5 on the shot clock, it's that, you know, can Chris Paul get us points here? And that's just not as good as can Kevin Durant get us points. Durant is just better in those situations, and I think that would be the difference between those two teams playing each other.
Yeah, that matchup scares me a little bit, but I agree. I think that just having, you know, not only Kevin Durant but Russell Westbrook on the court against that team, I think, you know, it proved to be better the other night, you know, in a playoff type game. So I'm excited for that series too. I think that could be a lot of fun. I think we could see some.
Yeah, I think by the end of that series, though, you know, it's funny to think that, you know, Blake Griffin's an Oklahoman. People love him around here.
Yeah.
Grew up in Oklahoma City. Chris Paul was kind of our first favorite player when the Hornets were here.
Yeah.
And I guarantee at the end of a 7-game series between those two teams, nobody will hate Blake Griffin and Chris Paul more than Oklahoma.
I think that's exactly right. So who do you see in the finals, and then who's your champ?
Oh, boy, that's tough. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the Thunder play the Spurs in the Western Conference Finals, there's no question in my mind the Thunder will beat them. You know, the Spurs basically have to rely on the fact that they have got to knock down contested shots against Oklahoma City, because I just think it was obvious in the last meeting that the matchup is just – it's just not there, because, you know, I think what Oklahoma City can do in with their size and length and athleticism, I just don't think San Antonio can run their stuff the way that they like to run it. And then – Russell Westbrook is the complete X factor there, because, you know, San Antonio just doesn't have anybody that can guard him. And, you know, if they try to put Danny Green on him, or they try to put anybody else on Russell Westbrook, then it opens the floor up for Reggie Jackson. And I think that's the reason you've seen Reggie Jackson have so much success against the Spurs, is that San Antonio's little guards just cannot guard Patty Mills, Tony Parker, any of those guys really just cannot handle the size and speed of Oklahoma City's guards. And I just think that the Thunder just are just too difficult of a matchup for the Spurs. Spurs are dangerous because they can hit, you know, 15 threes in a game. But I just favor the Thunder in that. And then, you know, it's hard for me. I think the Pacers are built to beat the Heat. I really do. And obviously the Thunder would very much prefer to see them. It looks like the Thunder did the Pacers a big favor yesterday, and Indiana might get the number one overall seed in the East. But I still just, you know, I can't pick against LeBron at this point. When the Heat are healthy, I just think that they're still the favorite. And in the finals, I don't know. Every time, you know, I think the Thunder are set up to win it. I really do. I think that, you know, with the way Durant evolved this year, it seems like he's kind of taken a step up to LeBron's level. They got the monkey off their back in January when they beat him in Miami. It seems like everything's set up for the Thunder to do it, but it just feels like, since I'm an Oklahoma City person, like my vision is too clouded. Like, I'm not seeing something I should be seeing. But I think the Thunder are built to win it this year, which feels really scary to say.
Yeah, it does. And it's hard not to make that pick. And you know what? I want them to play Miami in the finals. I want them to play them, and I want them to beat Miami in the finals. I don't know that it would feel as good. I know it would feel good, but it wouldn't feel as good if we beat Indiana in the finals. I think that would, you know, beating LeBron, getting the MVP, I think that's kind of the ultimate dream of a Thunder fan at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like kind of a perfect passing of the torch moment, you know, or you know, and then that is true. I mean, on one hand, you know, I think back to 2012, if the Thunder just could have played the Celtics in 2012, you know, that series would have been over in five games. The Thunder, I think, would have just run over the Celtics. But they got a tougher matchup. And but at the same time, you know, you don't want to kind of cop out. You want that title. It's like it's a weird catch-22 thing. You want to win the title, so you know, you don't want to live with the regret of not winning it. But at the same time, you do want the satisfaction of knowing that you went through LeBron and you beat the best player and you took it from him. Not that somebody else did it for you. So yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where, you know, title comes first. So, you know, heck, if the Bobcats happen to get through the Eastern Conference playoffs, I'm not going to be that upset about it.
Yeah, and it's just something that you feel like you shouldn't talk about too until it happens. But I'm excited for the postseason. Royce, thanks for coming on the podcast. We appreciate your time, and we'll be reading Daily Thunder every day until hopefully the beginning of June.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.